Hello and welcome back to PaleoCast. My name is Dave Marshall and this is episode 80, Paleo Creations, with professional paleo artist Bob Nichols. This is a very special interview as it signifies the end of the PaleoCast art competition, but it also falls on our fifth birthday. We'll review the PaleoCast year at a later date because right now I'm sure there's only one thing that people want to hear, and that's who walks away with the prizes. We received 52 entries and 3,706 votes in total. This year was especially close, with second and third places separated by just one vote. Fortunately, both won prizes in their respective categories, otherwise it would have been too close to call. Firstly, the winner of the invertebrate category is again David Clark. His entry this year, the Devonian Coral Biostrome, was yet another demonstration that good paleo art doesn't need to be about vertebrates, or nor does it even have to be on paper. In third place, and the under-16s winner, was Ply Bateman with Just Young. It's a great piece, and we all love the different techniques that Ply used in colouring and texturing his artwork. And beating Ply into second place by just one vote was Francesco Noble with Lengthening Shadows in the Late Jurassic, in which he features a beautifully coloured stegosaur. And that leaves us with the winner, Catch of the Day by Samantha Niewierowski, who drew some fantastically detailed nautiloids, which were unfortunately about to be eaten by a giant marine reptile. It's a beautiful piece that has so much depth to it with all the different layers, so congratulations to Samantha. Bob's choice was Dominic Grabowski's Where is the Sea? There are Pirates, about which Bob said, Dominic submitted four pieces to the competition, and all of them were strong contenders. However, I chose Where is the Sea? There are Pirates because it contains some unique features. First, the overall composition and the colour palette is descriptive and decorative in equal measure. The viewer is in no doubt about the prehistoric environment we are in, but the picture is just a few broad brushstrokes away from being an abstract piece, which is very interesting and clever. The gliding pterosaurs echo and clash with the diagonal waves, creating drama, and their wingtips lead our eyes to the wonderfully understated and ominous tylosaur. The positions of the pterosaurs also draw our eyes into the open space in the middle of the canvas, so we cannot avoid being threatened by the stormy waters. I can hear the wind and rain, and it makes me shiver. It is a painting that tells a story, but doesn't give too much away, allowing the viewer to imagine their own narrative. It is an impressive, high-level paleo artwork. So, congratulations to all those who won prizes, and thanks to all those who took part, whether that be entering a piece, voting, or just enjoying the spectacle. All of the pictures from this and other PaleoCast art competitions are available on our website, so we hope you enjoy browsing those. Also on our website, we've tons of pictures from today's interviewee, Bob Nichols, so make sure you check those out too, and as always, please like, share and subscribe to our show. It all really helps. Finally, we need to pass on a huge congratulations to Dr. Liz Martin, who has just passed her viva. We'll catch up with her soon and she can tell us all about it. Until then, we hope you enjoy this episode. Hi Bob, thank you very much for having me over.
You're welcome.
Right, let's start off. You are a professional paleo artist.
Yes.
So I assume that you've been very good at art from a very early age. Is that the case?
Drawing dinosaurs is one of my earliest memories. I really can't remember much before then. Yeah, when I think back as far as I can, I drew dinosaurs, or I scribbled things and called them dinosaurs. And like anything, if you do something enough, whatever it is, you'll get good at it. So I remember being the best at art at school, in my class. That was always the case. So yeah, I guess I got reasonably good quite soon. Well, that changed when I went to college, of course. And then I met other people who were good, so I realised I had to up my game.
Mm-hmm. And so did you always, like, you say that the first memory you had is of drawing dinosaurs. That never went away. You never got interested in anything else. It was just always dinosaurs.
Yeah, it's the one thing, subject that I kept coming back to. I mean, there was a time when the original Ghostbusters film came out. I loved that so much. I drew a lot of dinosaurs and monsters. And then when I went to college, I got, you know, being a teenager, I liked music. So I did a lot of album cover art and things like that. But I always came back to paleo art. Yeah, it's the one thing that I've always been most interested in and excited about. Yeah, so that interest has never left me. I mean, there have been peaks when it's been more interested, bigger interest than other times. But yeah, it's always been there.
And we always like to provide artwork to accompany episodes of PaleoCast that we host on our website. Will we have any of these Ghostbusters pictures? Have copies?
My parents have a huge pile of drawings in their loft, ranging from scribbles that were like mammoths to huge drawings of Stay Puft Man. Yeah, and the green blob. Yeah, they're all there. I haven't seen them for a while, so they might have been eaten by mice or something, but they do exist. I can see if I can find
Nichols
some for
originals.
You. Yeah, they're there.
Right, so there's the interest in dinosaurs. Why pursue the artistic side? Why not get into paleontology itself?
It was never an option, to be honest. I was born in August, so I was young for my year at school. Plus, I'm pretty dyslexic as well, and it was never diagnosed when I was at school, so I always struggled. They really were not the happiest days of my life. I didn't pass maths and English, and I didn't pass science. So doing an academic, you know, a serious subject like science, as an A-level or a degree, just wasn't an option for me. It was never even considered. So fortunately, I was good at drawing. So I was able to go and do a degree and a master's degree in illustration. And my interest in paleontology meant I followed paleo art. That's the only way I've got into paleo subjects. To think that I'm co-author on 3 science papers is pretty crazy. Yeah, because I have absolutely no formal science training at all. I'm just a prose geek. I love the subject. Yeah.
So you ended up with paleocreations.com.
Yeah.
And that's your website and your business. So how did that all get started?
Well, I did a degree and a master's in illustration, and then I had nothing to do, and I thought, what am I going to do? I've got all this art training, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, there's one thing I've always wanted to do, and that's do paleo art. And so following my master's, I set myself up as a freelance artist, and I was told I needed a business bank account and a business name, so I came up with Paleo Creations. It was as simple as that. So I chose the American spelling because it's an easier way of spelling words, and I'm being dyslexic. I'm pretty happy about that. That makes my life easier. It's simply the business name I chose when I was told I needed to do that. And that happened on the 8th of November, 1999. And every year I have a little celebration to think that I'm still making a living from paleo art. To be honest, back then, I never thought I could make it work. I thought it was just a dream. But I thought if I didn't give it a go, I might regret it. So, yeah, every 8th of November, I have a little celebration for Paleo Creations.
8th of November, Bob Nichols Day.
It's Paleo Creations Day. Yeah.
Right.
For me, I don't expect anybody else to celebrate that.
We can all draw a picture.
Yeah, okay.
To celebrate. Nice. But did you get started with this company because people were asking you to do artwork? Or did you just say, right, I need to get myself a company and then I can start promoting myself?
Well, when I was in my final year of my master's, I thought, if I'm going to have a go at being a paleo artist, somebody who makes a living from paleo art, I needed to make contacts. So, of course, nobody knew I was even attempting to do it. So I had to go out and find clients. Certainly, nobody came to me asking for work for the first 2 years. I had to go out and find the work, sending out samples of my artwork to different potential employers, going to conferences. So I had to be proactive, absolutely. If people think that being a paleo artist, making a living from paleo art, is just sat in front of your canvas or sculpting things every day, you've got to change your attitude, because it's about being a business person as well. You've got to go out looking for work, and Yeah, you've got to promote yourself as well. You can be the best artist in the world, but if you don't get out there and find the work, nobody knows you exist. So I was very proactive, and that's kind of... It was a snowball effect. I started off getting a few jobs, and they worked out well, and through word of mouth, I got more and more work.
Well, we'll get more onto how you actually get commissioned and what happens thereafter. But first, I'd like to get an understanding and tell everyone what kind of artwork you actually produce. Is it all on canvas? Is it digital? Is it models?
I have a go at everything, really. I like making stuff. I like making pictures and building models. So I've had, over the almost 20 years now, I've had a go at pretty much everything, from pencil drawings to acrylic paintings to digital sculptures to life-size fiberglass sculptures. I like to have a go at everything. Stops me from getting bored. And I think the more interest you have in your subject, the more you want to keep doing it, and the better you get. So... I kind of have a go at anything, really.
So what are your favourite and least favourite mediums to work with?
I like using my new Cintiq because, it's very intuitive. You basically just paint on the screen. That's very natural. But I also like pencils as well. There's something immediate about a pencil drawing. It's just simple, no complications. And you very quickly get a result with pencil drawing. The least favourite would be fiberglass. That stuff is horrible to use. I try to use Jesmonite instead, which is kind of an acrylic, less toxic version of fiberglass. But fiberglass is so lightweight and strong. It's ideal for building large models. So I think it's still unavoidable, really. But that's definitely the worst, especially on a hot day. Fiberglass on a hot day, that is grim.
Right, and what kind of organisms do you mostly draw? Is it mostly dinosaurs?
I'm pretty much a generalist. I will work on anything that anybody comes to me and says they need artwork for. I like the variation. I think the big kid in me most enjoys big vertebrates, like big mammals and big dinosaurs and anything big. That excites me, I guess. But the variety is what keeps me interested. I think from between now and Christmas, I'm going to be working on Mesozoic mammals. So, and my portfolio doesn't have much Mesozoic mammal stuff. So I'm looking forward to that.
And is that typical of most paleo artists, or do you find that, one person is a specialist in dinosaurs, the other's a specialist in fish or something?
Yeah, you definitely do have specialists. Some specialise in the feathered dinosaurs, others specialise in African mammals, and they are exceptionally good at that. The more time you spend with a particular subject, the better at it you're going to get. But I make a living from what I do. Everything I produce is commissioned, so I will work on anything that anybody approaches me for, so long as it's a fossil, really. I don't have much interest in illustrating anything that still exists. I mean, you can go out and photograph that stuff and it will be more beautiful than anything I can produce. So I enjoy the challenge of going out and reconstructing something that you can't see anymore. It's so dead it's turned to stone, and I want to show people what it might have looked like in life. That's what I enjoy.
So you'll draw anything for anyone in any medium, but what's the favourite thing that you've ever produced?
That's tricky, because I think the thing I most want to achieve is getting better each year that I work on artworks, and that installs a kind of mentality in you that when you look at your own work, you kind of scrutinize it. And so every time I look at my artwork, I tend to see all the faults and things I'd like to do differently or should have done better. So it's difficult to me to say I like much of what I've done. I don't look through my work and go, oh, wow, well done, or anything like that.
You're not selling yourself here.
No, I tend to look through it. Well, I think this is quite common with artists, actually. You look at things and you're always trying to improve. So I'm not often satisfied with what I do, but I am quite pleased, like the Cetacosaurus model, that got a lot of coverage, and it was a big part of the paper. I was second author on that, so I was really proud of that. To think that I didn't pass GCSE science and I was second author on that, respected paper, so I was really pleased about that. Yeah, and I just produced the artwork for the new Nodosaur for the Royal Tyrol Museum, the Borea Palter. I'm really quite proud of that, considering the circumstances. I was ill during that project, and I had a huge computer crash, and I had to work through the night with no sleep. So it's one of the, considering the circumstances, it's one of the works I'm most proud of. I managed to do something, extraordinary considering the circumstances, I think.
Do you find you produce more commission pieces or pieces that you would draw and then try and sell yourself?
Almost everything I do is commissioned. I mean, there are a lot of paleo artists in the world, but I don't think there are many of us that genuinely make a living from it. So everything I do is commissioned. I haven't done it for at least two years. I haven't done anything for myself. It's all been work from a brief that somebody supplied me with. So yeah, vastly more commissions than my own work. I have sketchbooks full of ideas that I'd like to do, and sometimes I'm able to use them in the commissions I get asked to produce. But it's commissions, which is good. I'm in the position now where I'm sometimes turning work away, which is an unusual position to think. When I started out, I didn't even realize, didn't honestly think I'd make a living from it. But now I'm turning work away, which is really nice, which is a fortunate position to be in.
Yeah, it sounds good. But do you resent the lack of creativity that you can have with these things?
Well, I do get frustrated that I've got all these ideas and I don't have time to do them. That is a frustration. But I work on a lot of subjects that I would pass by if they weren't brought to me in a brief. And there are artworks in my portfolio that I would never have considered doing, featuring animals and behaviours that I would never have thought of by myself. So I enjoy the challenge of getting a brief and thinking, how am I going to bring this to life? So I'm happy doing commissions. It also means I can make a living from my hobby, which is nice.
Right, so I'm an academic. I'm emailing you now about a new paper that I've just got about the most beautiful fossil that no one's ever heard of, Limulodes.
Yeah,
right.
Sounds good.
Yeah. What's the process from there? Because I'm guessing that you don't know what it looks like. I'm guessing no one does.
Is it a trilobite?
No.
No? Oh, right.
No, it's okay. A Sinziphosaurian.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. Oh. You've thrown me then because I know I don't know that at all. So I'd first need to talk to you for a while. Say, what is it?
Yep.
And then we'd collate information. You'd send me what you have in terms of fossil photos and measurements and any kind of information you have. And I'd do my own bit of research as well and see what information I can pick up. And I'd put it together in a big folder. And we'd talk about what characteristics and what behavior and what environmental features need to be put into the picture. Then I'd produce a first draft drawing, send that to you, and then you'd send it out to any co-authors and then send it back to me with your comments. That will vary from this isn't working, start again, to I like it, maybe just tweak this or tweak that. And so I make those alterations and send it back to you. This is usually, it used to be a pencil drawing, now I do it digitally. And I will, this, that will go backwards and forwards, me making alterations until we have a final draft illustration, which we will have signed off. And once it's signed off, I will then go ahead and start producing the final artwork. I'd never start producing a final artwork until I know we have an agreed composition. And that process means that since you're spending money on this artwork, you know you're going to get the type of artwork that you want because you've seen the draft. And then I'd go ahead and finish the illustration. And then there's always a chance that once I send it to you, I can still make a few more tweaks. It's never kind of like, this is it, lump it. There's always a few alterations at the end.
Do you find that the process of getting those tweaks and revisions can go on for weeks and months?
It can go on for a long time. Never months, because I'm always working to a deadline. So it's usually maximum a couple of weeks. But it can, and it varies greatly depending on the subject. If it's a subject I'm familiar with, it can usually get done in a few days. Whereas what you just mentioned to me, not having a good knowledge of what type of creature it is, that could be more of a challenge. So it would require more research and probably more drawings, yeah, and more alterations.
Right, so I want my Limuloides okay. drawing. It's absolutely beautiful. Oh, and it's going to be the best picture ever, right?
Okay.
How much is that going to cost me? Can you provide me a quote, or can you only do this retrospectively after you know how much time and effort you've put into it?
Well, I'd give somebody a rough estimate immediately so they could tell me whether they could afford a type of artwork.
No, probably not. But not on PaleoCast budget.
Yeah, well, that's the advantage of having a variety of mediums that you work in. And as you say, well, I want this illustrated, and I can say, well, a pencil drawing will cost this. A painting will cost this. A composite photorealistic artwork will cost this. A life-size model will cost this. So you've always got a variety of different mediums that will cost a different amount. And then once I know exactly what you need, that's when I'd give you a quote. And then I'd go ahead, and we'd go ahead and start doing the draft work, the draft drawings. So you'd know how much it was going to cost before I start doing the artwork. Yeah, I think it would be a recipe for disaster for me to make an artwork without an agreed price, and then to deliver it, and then maybe have some kind of dispute over what it will be paid. It's always agreed up front. And if it's a huge project, like if I'm going to be spending 3 months producing a life-size model, I'm going to probably need to be paid in parts, basically. I'm going to need an upfront payment to pay for materials and be able to afford to live those 3 months, and then be paid the majority when it's delivered, finished and delivered. Yeah. Do you want actual prices? How much that will cost? I mean, it varies enormously. If it's just a pencil drawing, it might be £100. If it's a life-size pliosaur head, it could be £10,000. Something, you know, even bigger, you know, if you're talking like a 5 or 6 meter long dinosaur, you could be talking near 20,000-25,000. Or an illustration, a painting could be, well, I tend to work out how many weeks is it going to take me to do, and how many materials am I going to need. If it's a 3D model, you're going to need lots more materials, so the price goes up. Illustrations, no matter how complicated, or even if they're photorealistic, they never require too much material, so it varies.
Do you ever get asked to produce artwork for free or for good exposure?
Not so much anymore, but yes, I did all the time. I think there's it's a common problem paleo artists have, or perhaps all artists. I think it's primarily artists who suffer from this, because I think people think because you enjoy your work, you should be willing to do it for free, almost like it's your hobby. But, you know, ask an accountant to do something for free. I know accountants who love what they do. Will they do work for free? I don't think so. A solicitor? No. A mechanic? I don't think so. Why should paleo artists or any artist do things for free? If you're good at something, you should be paid for it, right? And it's skilled work. I mean, we have to put in a lot of effort and a lot of research and background work into these artworks. It takes a lot of time to get it right. So yeah, we deserve to be paid for it, I think. Yeah. Certainly don't, if you're a young artist starting out, don't be taken in by that argument. You should be paid for what you do. Otherwise they wouldn't be coming for you. If everybody could do this, they wouldn't be coming to ask you to produce work. You should be paid for it.
I might mention that there's a donate button on the PaleoCast website around about now.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you should do. Is it a big button?
It's not as big as it should be.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not as big as it needs to be.
It should be a big red button.
Have you ever turned down a commission? You just said, like, look, there's no way I can draw this. There's no way you're offering enough money. This, what you're asking is just completely out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's very rare that I have to say you haven't got enough money, goodbye. Because like I said, I've got a variety of different mediums I can produce artwork in. So I can always adjust the style and complexity of artwork to meet somebody's budget. I think there's only ever, and sometimes when I'm really busy, I have to say I'd love to do that, but I really can't. I just don't have the time. If you take on too much, you don't have the time, and the quality of your artwork suffers. So sometimes you have to say no. I can only think of one occasion when I could have done the work and I said no, I'm not going to do it. And that was when I was approached by a creationist magazine to do a mosasaur painting, and they were going to pay good money for it. And I thought, I really could do this work, but do I want to produce paleo artwork for a creationist magazine? And Other people might want to, and, you know, fair play to you, but that was not something I was willing to do. And I had quite a long conversation with my friends about it. It's like, you know, should I do this? I'm trying to make a living from paleo art. Should I be selective about who I do it for? And on that one occasion, I thought, you know, who are you if you're not your morality? So I thought, no, I'm not. I can't do that. In all honesty, I can't do that.
So we've discussed in previous episodes what paleo art is and how it works. But in this interview, I'm looking to get a bit more about what life as a paleo artist is actually like. Is paleo art a career that you would recommend to others?
That's a tricky one because I could be wrong, but I don't think there are any jobs in paleo art. If you want to be a professional paleo artist, you have to be a freelance artist. And that's a tough lifestyle for a generalist illustrator. So to be a specialist in a particular field, it's always going to be difficult. It's going to be very competitive. You're going to have to be very flexible on your working hours. Like, I haven't had a day off now for nearly 2 months. If you're going to meet deadlines, you're going to have to be flexible on things like that. And maybe when all your friends go out for a drink, you're not going to go with them. So I would recommend it to somebody who is kind of fanatical, who loves doing it and would do paleo art even if it wasn't your job, because you've got to love it. You've got to love doing it because it's going to kind of, like most self-employed people, You've got to kind of live it. So that's not for everybody. So I would recommend it. But be prepared to sacrifice parts of your life sometimes and stay in and get some work done. But I think that's kind of common amongst self-employment. So it's not for everybody. But yeah, I'd say have a go at it. If I can do it, right? I've got no formal science training. I'm just a dyslexic country boy who is kind of fanatical about it. So if I can do it, other people can. You just got to be willing to, you know, finance visits to conferences and get out there and meet people and send your artwork out to museums and universities. Yeah, you just got to be clever about it.
Is there enough space for more paleo artists?
I don't know. There must be, because I'm not able to take on all the work I'm offered. So I think there's probably room. I think illustration is very competitive. There is never enough work for everybody who wants to do illustration to be a professional illustrator. So I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. Possibly, maybe. I don't know. It depends how much money paleontologists have. Are they likely to get more money or less money in the future?
I think I can guess.
Yeah, ask the Brexiteers.
Yeah. How easy is it for you to work? As in, like, can you do it in front of the TV, or do you need complete silence? Do you have to tell your wife to get out and not come back for 2 weeks?
Yeah, I work from home on my own pretty much all the time, so I have quite a isolated lifestyle. So I always tend to have something on in the background while I'm working, whether it's a DVD or YouTube or a podcast or something like that, or an audiobook. I always have something on. Otherwise, it'd just be me in silence all day, and I'd have my own voice. And my God, I don't want to listen to myself all day. It would drive me crazy. So I kind of enjoy having a bit of a distraction. I don't work downstairs in front of the TV because working from home is tricky. It's difficult to switch off. So here I kind of work upstairs here in my studio, and I never really take work with me downstairs. That's my home down there. If I don't have that separation, it becomes even more blurred. You know, work and home life becomes even more blurred. So.
And you've got a daughter as well, a young daughter.
Yeah, she's 2.
So surely you can't give it all your full attention. Something will invariably come up. How easy is it to pick up your work, to put it down, go do something else, and then get back into the zone? Is that something you can do easily?
I can usually switch off and get straight back into it with no trouble at all. I mean, having my daughter in my workplace is kind of like the best possible distraction. But it does mean I get to see her every day, whereas a lot of people wouldn't. They'd go into work. So Yeah, I have no problem with it. I think as long as I don't ever take work downstairs, I can happily go downstairs for a distraction and then come back up and just crack on with it. Yeah, I've never had any trouble working when I need to. I think you just need to have some good self-discipline. And I try to start work at a particular time every day. I have my lunch break at a particular time every day, and I finish work to help get my daughter to bed. And then if I need to, I'll go back to work after dinner. So I'm quite strict on times. It keeps me producing a good amount of work each day and each week.
And is your daughter showing any talent in drawing at this early age?
She draws a lot, yeah. She was 2.5 now. But yeah, she does draw and she knows names of dinosaurs. Yeah, so she's going in the right direction. I'm hoping she can help me out at some point in the future.
And what do your family and your friends think of your career and how much of your life you devote to it?
It's primarily a source of ridicule for my friends. they think it's great. Yeah, it's great material for them to take the mickey out of me, to be honest. It's never ending. Yeah, and it's I get constantly teased that when am I going to get a proper job?
Yeah.
They also think that maybe, I'm a bit obsessive. I maybe got OCD and a variety of other mental illnesses. Most people kind of respect it. I think they enjoy that it's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are interested in what I do. It has been in the past a kind of a party game for a stranger to be asked, guess what he does for a job. And nobody ever really does. And then there's the conversation. It's like, really? What? Is that a job? And I have to explain it's mostly not a job. But there are a few that do it, yeah. So
I get introduced to a lot of places as, oh, so this is the paleontologist.
Yeah,
oh,
right, yeah.
Oh, you're the one I've heard about.
I get introduced as Dinosaur Bob a lot. the guy who draws dinosaurs, yeah. I kind of like that, though. That's okay. I'm happy with that.
Do you feel that you particularly belong to any group? Do the artists think that you're not really part of them because you're such a niche paleo artist? And do the paleontologists think you're not really one of us because you're an artist? Do you? Is it like a little lonely clique, the paleo artists?
I know that there are some paleontologists that don't have an interest in paleo art, but I've never been treated in a way that would make me think that they didn't want me around at conferences. And maybe they do feel that way, but I've never experienced it. I've always been made welcome. A lot of my closest friends are paleontologists, so I've never experienced that. And in terms of the art, if I think about fine art, maybe they would feel that, one of the main things of paleo art is you have to try and learn so much about the subject that you're reducing the gaps for self-expression and speculation as possible. You're trying to reduce those by informing yourself as much as possible about the subject. So it isn't about maximizing self-expression, which fine art often is. So there is a big disconnection there. I think a lot of fine artists might say that paleo art is illustration. But then if you get 5 paleo artists in a room and get them to illustrate the same subject, you're going to get 5 pretty different artworks. So there is a lot of self-expression there. So that's an interesting argument. But I personally have never experienced any kind of anybody talking down their nose at me or in a disrespectful way or patronising way or any way to suggest they didn't want me around. Maybe I'm just not very good at picking up on the signals. And I don't feel like I belong. Oh, actually, I do. I feel like I belong to the paleontological community more than I feel like I belong to the art community, I think.
And then finally, just to wrap it all up, what's the highlight of being a paleo artist for you?
For me, it's doing my hobby as a job. I would do this in my spare time if I had to have another job. This is what I do, something I've never lost interest in doing. Yeah, this is me, really, is paleo art. So getting up every day and doing it as a job, even when you have tough times and difficult deadlines and you might be drawing the 100th Tyrannosaurus Rex that year, they're still amazing animals. And I never get tired of trying to make them look real and bring them to life.
All right, Bob. Well, thanks for having us over.
You're welcome. It's been really good fun. Thank you.
PaleoCast was brought to you by Dave Marshall, with Joe Keating, Laura Soule, Liz Martin-Silverstone and Caitlin Coleri. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, but the show now relies on contributions from you, the listeners. If you've liked this episode, please consider donating, and thanks to everyone that's helped out so far. We'd also like to thank the Ocean Collective for use of their music. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material to this episode and for our archive of past programmes. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at @paleocast and like us at facebook.com/paleocast to get all the latest news.